Monsters and monarchs are filled with great stories, serial killers in classical myth and history, Debbie Felton. And if you missed our first hour on Coast to Coast, you missed an important update from Peter Lance in this ongoing investigation he's had into the Doris Duke story. So here's the richest woman in her day, responsible, clearly, for the murder of a man who had been kind of a major domo, kind of a guy who'd been a traveling companion, somebody that she considered very close, but he was kind of tired of her shenanigans and decided that it was time to be off on his own and to take his successful career, which he had one, to Hollywood, where he was being hired regularly as an art director for films and had worked on several popular movies, up until the night when she ran over him. And we had the update in the first hour. If you missed it, you should go back and listen to it with Bob Walker, who was then 13 years old on his paper route when he was an ear witness for the murder and then an eyewitness to the aftermath. And you can hear that at any time if you're a Coast insider. Just go ahead. Go to coasttocoastam.com and sign up. And that comes along, of course, with trips back to the Art Bell Vault. It's all part of the same package. Don't miss it. Find out more at coasttocoastam.com. And I can't wait to find out what more you have to say about serial killers and classical myth and history next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. I like to always start with a first-time caller line when we have one, and we do for our guest, Debbie Felton. It's Michael in Scottsdale on Coast to Coast AM. Michael?
Yes. Hi, Ian. You know, there's a lot of cold cases for aristocracy dying. You know, what comes to mind is the French aristocracy with Queen Eleanor of Aquitaine, who supposedly poisoned the king's mistress. But the one I'm thinking about right now is Alexander the Great, the cold case for thousands of years. He was in Babylon at a time at a banquet. Supposedly he drank some wine and then he complained about stomach aches. And then after that, he fell ill. And then there's this new study that just came out that basically what they're saying is that he ingested white hellebore, which someone put in his wine. And that's how he got poisoned. Now, this particular herb is not in Babylon. It's in, it's found in his homeland in Greece. So, you know, it must have been someone who brought it, you know, with them to actually poison him.
First of all, you've set the bar very high for every subsequent caller. It's a really solid way. Yeah. Okay. So let's bring in Detective Debbie Felton on this one. Debbie?
So, yes, the theory that Alexander was intentionally poisoned is, I mean, that's pretty much is the current theory. And the question of whether someone had been planning it for a long time or not is what we still don't know. But, you know, your point is a good one, that the poison doesn't seem to have been native to the area in which he actually died, so somebody must have brought it along on the trip, which then sort of brings the question, well, does this person make a habit of doing that, and are they a
right
serial killer? So, yeah, I think, you know, evidence theories and evidence for the theories, it's ongoing. Like you said, it's a recent study. I'm actually not familiar with the particular most recent work on this, other than, yes, Alexander was most likely poisoned rather than just having some sort of a malady. But, you know, he was definitely, he had definitely overextended himself on this conquest of, you know, virtually the limits of the known ancient world at the time. So it's a little hard to say what got him and who got him, you know?
Yeah. You know, I don't know what you thought when you agreed to come on this show, but I'm guessing it wasn't that we were going to be throwing all these curves at you from all the stuff that the rest of us weirdos research.
But that's totally
what
awesome.
It is. And that's what we do in the middle of the night. We're always figuring out the strangest things, which may not otherwise fit in polite company. All right. So west of the Rock.
I have to go and look up that, you know, the current theory about Alexander and the white hellebore.
Yeah. Right after you do Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. You've got a list of some homework, Missy. You better get to work on that. Matt is in Port Angeles, Washington, on Coast to Coast AM. Matt?
Greetings, Ian and Debbie. And,
hey.
I hope I'm coming through okay. You know, when you were talking about ancient Rome, you know, if you look at the long history of ancient Rome and the problems they had there, like severe air pollution, one book I read mentioned that the water that came in on the aqueducts was actually flowing through lead pipes in the city. So you're talking about lead poisoning on top of the bad air and poor nutrition and everything. And to me, it seems like, you know, yeah, sure, they killed for power, but it wasn't really about surviving, plain and simple. Because if you had power, you could afford to have the stuff that kept you alive. And outside of that, what about the Medicis in Italy? They seem to have a good history.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're the series, you know, they're the subject of a whatever Cinemax series or Showtime series or something. So they get the Medicis get a lot more love when it comes to their notorious acts than I think some others. But Debbie, where are you with all that?
Well, I think it depends on what time period you're talking about, because the cases that I have included in the book tend to be a little earlier than the period that I think, I'm sorry, was it Matt or no?
Yeah, this was Matt. Yep.
Just mentioned. So if you're looking, you know, second and first century CE, BCE and then first century CE, I think it's still a little earlier than the height of the, you know, pollution period that you're mentioning, but that doesn't mean that, you know, your point is still obviously very, very relevant in terms of there are so many things that, you know, are out to get you. And can you really tell whether someone was poisoned by something someone gave them or by something in their environment?
Yeah. You know, I think there have been many people who have studied mythology or narrative over the years, and they've come to the conclusion that so much of what shaped all of those cultures all took place within an area of like 8x12, whatever the home area was, and that it was all about survival, and it was the smells of the house, and it was the shadows on the wall, and it was the noises that you could hear because they weren't necessarily very well insulated places, and the fact that a lot of these homes existed even still on the outer fringes where wildlife roamed, and that's the one part that perhaps we find ourselves disconnected to, because we live in a much safer environment. And although every kid may see a tree in the twilight, you know, outside of a window in a Steven Spielberg kind of way and imagine that there are beasts under the bed or things in the closet. I mean, it was a real, that those belief systems were pretty ingrained just in their environment, in the stifling environment in which people lived. Let's go to Joe, who's in the Bronx on Coast to Coast AM. Joe?
Hey, Ian, how are you?
Doing right. Go ahead.
Good. Yeah, Debbie, good topic. Yeah, I appreciate that. Now, how would you rank a historic figure like Vlad the Impaler, ruler of Romania, who is said to have killed 20,000 people and decapitated them and stuck their heads on stakes, which formed along the bridge to his castle? With how would you rate him a mass murderer, obviously? Would you also call him a serial killer? And how would you rank him, like, with the likes of Ted Bundy?
Yeah.
Well, okay, interesting question. I don't know as much about Vlad the Impaler as about, you know, the ancient Greece and Rome. But you're dealing, again, with a question of what was the motivation behind that? Because you've got a lot of leaders who are jealous of their power, like they're very possessive of it. And they get paranoid. Paranoia was one of the big characteristics of or has been one of the characteristics of leaders throughout time. And so if you've got someone like, say, the Emperor Tiberius, who had so many people killed, like hundreds, I think, but it was out of fear for his position rather than, say, he got enjoyment out of it. In fact, he seemed to get no enjoyment out of it. What is going on with Vlad the Impaler? Was it to protect his kingdom, his power? Did he relish it? So what I'm saying is that the motivation and the emotional reasons why someone is doing it seem to be part of the difference between paranoid monarch versus a serial killer who's got the motivations, the psychological motivations that, say, criminologists and psychologists would normally attribute to a serial killer, as opposed to a paranoid ruler abusing power.
Yeah, but I think it's that capacity for empathy, though, too, which is interesting, yeah. Right? For Vlad, apparently there was like a psychic break for Vlad. Up until a certain point, he had been, fide defensor. He had been... he had been a righteous member of the of Christendom, and then there's something that just snaps, and he becomes so bottom line in his approach to pain and cruelty to others that it does make you wonder, like, okay, well, did he just lose all empathy? Because even Constantine, who is held up, for centuries as being this sort of this high mark for Roman emperors, he killed thousands of people according to tradition, and did it to consolidate power and to get rid of factionalism, which he hated more than anything in the world. And I think, okay, well, he didn't really bust a tear over that. He didn't seem to be all that conflicted about it. So I don't know. I think that's why this book was so interesting, because it really pushes some of these edges out a little bit further from the historical record. All right, somebody named Neo Max in Mojave, California, on Coast to Coast. You have to tell me what the origin is of that name, Neo Max.
You tell me.
Well, no, I mean that.
The reason why I chose that name, one of y'all must know something about it. It'll ring a bell later.
Well, is it a nickname?
Yeah, it's a nickname. It's correct.
Okay. All right. But I think I'm getting a weird echo from me, so I'm going to put you on hold, and if you want to, just so we don't have that slapping back on me. But it sounded a little bit like, was that from The Matrix? Am I forgetting something? All right, Joe is in Long Island on Coast to Coast for Monsters and Monarchs. Debbie Felton,
yeah,
go ahead, Joe.
I want to go into two areas, into the woman, but also you mentioned the Greek mythology where the guy was just protecting his wife from potential lovers. That's only one criteria. Shouldn't there be more reasons to kill people if you're a serial killer? And he's also contradicting himself. He's making himself out to be, wholly protecting his wife, and yet he's killing people. And then on the woman, you didn't mention if there was a posse of women killing one man, like a group serial killers, like a posse of women, seductress, maybe seducing the guy, then killing him. And then the elitist woman, like the woman from the Bible, Jezebel, who felt, yep, because of her power, she, that gave her, free rein on just killing whoever she wanted to.
Well, or even Salome, if we look at it that way, too. Where are you, Debbie Felton?
Oh, well, there are examples of women getting together and poisoning men, or at least that's how the story was told. Now, not via seduction, but again via they're cooking. In this case, they were preparing medicine, or that was what they said they were doing. They were preparing medicine because there was an illness going through the city. Sort of like people taking ivermectin now or whatever the thing
right.
was that the women made it. A lot of men died, and so the women were accused of poisoning them rather than helping them. So that is one case where you have a bunch of women. It was like the case of the Roman matrons is what we sort of call it. And so they were accused of killing a lot of men. And again, it was men that they were killing in positions of power, and the motives were, you know, the accusers didn't say what the women's motives were exactly. But that's one example of the sort of thing you're talking about. And you did have several points, and so I'm not sure how many of them you want me to address right now. And I think Ian can you know, certainly speak to the Jezebel and Salome.
Well,
you brought up Salome, but yeah.
I brought up Salome because I think she's such an, again, it comes down to, it's such a twisted story, right? I mean, and Jezebel too, for that matter. And there are any number of either mass killers or serial killers that seem to be spoken of, and they're used as either dopey or almost a tragic kind of character in the case of Salome, in that here she was engaged to her stepfather, and it's just weird, and that her mother is one of the women who's really behind the murder of John the Baptist. To speak back to what you were talking about in Monsters and Monarchs, it's not so much the would-be guy at Herodotus, it wasn't him, it was the mom. And she was the one who was actually, you know, pushing her daughter to ask for this. And that, I think that is something, again, that we kind of forget about in history, is that motivation that comes from the generation before. Even if no one can remember Salome's mom's name, we still talk about Salome, which is kind of a raw deal if you look at it in sort of any kind of historical justice. But
well, I think our history has a lot to do with that, too. All those pictures of Salome with that, you know, being presented
yeah.
with John the Baptist on a platter.
Yep. And it makes for, by the way, it's an amazing opera. It's a Strauss opera, and it's just incredible. Just one of the things I'll never forget. All right. But then I'm reminded, too, of Elizabeth Bathory.
Oh, sure. Yes, the Blood Countess. Yeah.
Yeah, but she was a serial, I mean, by anybody's definition, a serial killer,
yes.
You know. And again, it's the abuse of power and how we forget how pervasive this is. And back to your population point, if there is a percentage, whatever that number is, of any given group of people that may be inclined to become a serial killer, let's say it's 0.51%, right? When any, we with the enormous number of people that are alive today, that is only going to increase the actual appearance of somebody like that. So we have more of them, even if the percentages remain the same. And that's part of what I found so fascinating about Debbie's work, because we can relate to, so we see these statues, right? We've seen these busts. We've seen these paintings. And we talk about them. They're portrayed in cartoons. But we don't really get down to cases of what they actually were accused of. History has given so many of them a pass because in other ways, they were positive political figures, or they seem to have done something that might resemble good. I'm not exactly sure that's true. We only have 30 more minutes left, so we'll hope that you jump in when we give the numbers here coming up in just a second. The book is Monsters and Monarchs, Serial Killers in Classical Myth and History. Debbie Felton is our guest. Don't miss your opportunity to be a part of this conversation next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Monsters and Monarchs, Debbie Felton will take your calls, and we'll wrap things up with toward the end of the book, she gets into a very compelling argument about something which I think maybe, you know, we forget about, this idea of female child snatchers. Next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. All right, so we've got Jay and Barry hanging on. Maybe time for a couple more, too, but calls for Debbie Felton on Coast to Coast AM, Monsters and Monarchs. We'll start with Barry because he's on a first-time caller line. Barry?
Hi, how are you?
Good. You're in New Jersey?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, I recently came across an interesting item. It was a little meme on the internet that basically said, on this date in history, Katerina Popova was arrested for murdering over 300 husbands, which seems like a lot, but, you know, men. It was cute, but apparently it's based, in fact, this woman in Russia for 30 years was hired by women who had tyrannical husbands that were abusing them, and she murdered over 300 of them until one of her, shall we say, employers had a moment of conscience and turned her into the police.
Hmm. Don't know that story, but that's so consistent in a lot of ways with the women from the classics. Debbie, where are you with that?
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of Locusta of Gaul, and just, you know,
right,
hiring somebody to get rid of the annoying people in your life. And I mean, to be honest, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And I don't even know that I'd think 300 is excessive. I mean, for what somebody could in fact do in that position, in that situation. But yeah, I don't know what century that was, and like I'm unfamiliar with the specific case, like Ian said he was, but it absolutely put me in mind of somebody like Lacusta.
Yeah. Jay is in North Dakota on Coast to Coast AM. Jay?
Hi, I'd like to mention three sociopath leaders in history. And it seems that sociopath leaders have followers who just love to follow and not think for themselves because they're helpless stooges and sheeple. And the first one is Charles Manson. He didn't kill anyone, but he got life in prison for inspiring his followers to go out and kill. And
well,
kill for him.
Just
now,
to be clear, wait. Just to be clear, we don't know. He's never been convicted of killing anybody.
But he
has
may
been,
well have killed at least one or two people himself. Yeah.
Right. Just so you know, I mean, because, and he even said it himself, but he was never convicted of it. But to your point, I mean, it was a lot. He was able to get other people to follow, but he very likely went to prison for crimes that he was never convicted of, as much as anything.
I want to add that he was able to influence all those women by reading How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Right. So, again, the serial killer CEO connection. All right, Jay, well, who was the second one you wanted to mention?
Jim Jones of Jonestown, Guyana. He inspired people to go out and die for him. The famous Drink the Kool-Aid guy from Jonestown, Guyana. And then the last one is someone who sent out killers of innocent people at work and also to die for him at the insurrection in the nation.
Oh, no, we're not doing that. I'm not going to go political. I'm not doing that. But listen, let's go with Jim Jones, because that was a good point before you decided to ruin it. And I only mean that in the sense of I don't want 20 calls afterward, people talking about this or debating that. This isn't that show. But to the best part of your point, actually, Jim Jones did inspire people to murder, not just to commit suicide. And by the way, it wasn't Kool-Aid. Poor Kool-Aid will never survive that.
Yeah.
Right?
But yeah, didn't they kill a journalist?
Yeah, I mean, he convinced people to grab machine guns and go shoot. It was a journalist, a cameraman, and a congressman from California.
Congressman. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it wasn't just, and again, who knows what else happened before that point? I mean, that when you're dealing with that level of megalomania, all things are possible. But I think that's, you know, I want to go back to the female point too, because I thought, you know, there's always been this discussion about, and even in the early days of American history, infanticide, it was not usually a case of a woman doing this over and over again, although that could have happened. But it is interesting, and you talk about the female, the archetype of the old hag, the female baby snatchers. Can you tease all that out a little bit?
Sure. There are several things going on there as far as antiquity is concerned, and one of them is just the characterization of witches, at least in Rome, not so much in Greece. But in Rome, witches as using the body parts of infants and children in their spells of various kinds. So witches are one category there. And then the other is, I think you mentioned before the break, female child-snatching demons or creatures of some sort, which are these sort of monstrous female creatures that were thought to snatch infants from their beds. And So there are a few things going on there, which I'll try to make this quick. One is that some of these characters may have arisen as ways to explain things like sudden infant death, like crib death. But that that doesn't mesh so much with the, well, they're being snatched away from their cribs, and where did they go, and do you find them later? And one of the things that really struck me was we have a piece of historical evidence as opposed to just myths in terms of there's an actual epitaph, a gravestone inscription that describes, it's sort of written in the first person from the point of view of the child, and it says, "As I grew towards my fourth year, I was seized and killed. I was snatched by a witch's hand. Parents, guard your children well, lest grief of this magnitude should implant itself in your breast." So that, I mean, by saying that, you know, the having a grave marker that says, "I was killed by a witch," what does that mean about the circumstances of this child's death? Was there some mutilation? You're not just going to say witch, you know, when there was, I mean, because they attributed child mutilation to witches, not just, you know, death in the...
Right.
So, yeah, so there was clearly this belief that witches were responsible when, in fact, what some of these historical documents may be describing is pederastic serial killers.
You know, but maybe it's also, and that's always, you know, that's a recurring theme that people talk about to this day with politicians and on both sides and, you know, people leading cults and all the secret satanic stuff. And but putting that aside for the moment, it actually could have been very much a political statement without any other media other than stone and chisel to try to back up why it was that they lost their child. It might have been to speak against suspicion that the parents had something to do with it.
Oh, that's certainly possible, too. It's like, yeah, I mean, again, a lot of what we're getting in all of these forms is propaganda of some sort.
Right, an agenda of why did these messages, why were they originally offered, and then, for that matter, why did they prosper? Vincent is in Missouri on Coast to Coast AM, and the time we have left for Debbie Felton. Go ahead, Vincent.
Hi, how are you?
Good, go for it, man.
I just caught kind of the tail end of the conversation here, so I gather that you guys are talking about serial killers and
In particular, in antiquity. So Debbie Felton's work is about how, you know, in ancient Greece and Rome, these things have been going on and that serial killers have always been amongst us. Did you have a point you want to make about just in general on serial killers?
When it comes to serial killers, I think that one of the things a lot of people miss out on is the kind of devil's advocate side, is I don't think... many, if any at all, people are born just with that drive to take someone's life for no good reason. I think we're missing out on the trauma that motivates a lot of these people. I think it's a sad thing about our society that a lot of these things, even from the beginning of time until now, could have been prevented by humans just showing one another a little bit more compassion and looking out for their neighbor.
Love that idea. Do you not believe that there are some people, a percentage of people that are... that are just bad seeds, or that people become serial killers because of the opposite? They were overly indulged as children.
Being a Christian man myself, I believe that we're all born with the capacity to be serial killers. The scriptures say that we issue forth from the womb speaking lies and hypocrisies. So we have that innate nature to be evil.
I don't think we are. I'm going to, as a Christian man, I'm going to debate that. I'm going to say, as a Christian man, I think that's a misinterpretation of that scripture, that we are all born to be serial killers until we talk ourselves out of it or something. And I think it betrays your original point. I mean, I think there are some people, and we get into this nature versus nurture argument, but there's some arguments, and I'll turn to Debbie on this, where we really are talking about a biochemical thing. It isn't something necessarily that, it's because the parents were mean to a child or that the child was bullied at school, but that starting from a very early age, it would seem some people, that there's something biochemically wrong with them that they've never been able to develop the ability to have empathy.
Yeah, I you know, there's really a confluence of influences, I think, including most likely something going on neurologically, but also, as our caller is saying, a lack of caring. And but it's not as if everybody who had an abusive childhood turns into a serial killer. So there's got, you know, there's something else going on there. We did talk a little earlier in the broadcast about some, you know, potential physical neurological causes. But I do want to, you know, to the caller's point. I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Vincent.
We were talking about the Emperor Nero earlier, and the sources make a point of saying how horrible his mother was. So it's not surprising he ended up being horrible himself. So, you know, when back in ancient times, you know, like 2,000 years ago, when they wouldn't think about neurological causes necessarily, they did back then attribute it to a lack of caring at an early age. But nowadays, there's a lot of research being done into how the brain is wired, in addition
right.
to these, like the both nurture and nature in combination, like what is going to be triggered there. Yeah.
Like which one will triumph over the other? Yeah, and I'm okay with that. And I don't, but I think what we know is there are a lot of people who are raised in really terrible households, and they were raised by terrible parents, and they were abused, and they don't become serial killers. You know, and it just we just got to say the overwhelming percentage of people that grow up with terrible parents don't become serial killers.
Well, and too, there are people who have wonderful parents who grow
right.
up to be serial. You mentioned The Bad Seed before, and that really struck me because that play and the movie based
yeah.
on it. I mean, it's about a little girl who is
yeah.
literally a sociopath, no empathy whatsoever, and her parents are great. You know, but it also is a female serial killer. Since we were talking about the females, so it was nice thing you slipped in there.
And one of those stories, too, it's actually the grandmother is the one that figures it out. You know, that the girl is so good at convincing everybody, but it somehow the grandmother was detached enough to be able to figure it out. You know, but I think that, again, comes down to, and this is where, are we talking about a small percentage of all humanity for all of time
yeah.
might have been inclined to do this, and that some people, you know, there's, I think it's a Jack Reacher novel or movie, I can't remember which one I read it, but it's something about how some people that, what great way to become, if you really want to kill people, you know, you could join the military. You can, that'd be one way to cover for your interest in going out and shooting at people. And that if you've got, that's a good way to cover for the fact that you've got kind of a screw loose. I'm not saying that it's happened or that people should do it, but that was the proposition in that novel. And yeah, but I mean, I think that there's lots of ways that people, and we don't have the tools to weed them out. We almost only can figure these things out in the rearview mirror, and maybe the larger cinemascope size rearview mirror of history, right? In the jumbotron of history, we can actually see these things happen. And that's what I like about your book, is we can go, okay, look at that. It fits a very modern pattern to me.
Yeah.
Sad, perhaps, but still interesting. And it's another reason why we're still sorting these things out in our media, because there are no easy answers to this. We can't just say, oh, you know, they didn't mean it. If only somebody had shown them some love, this would never have happened. We know that the recidivism rate of people coming out of prison and doing it again, I don't know, or hospitals for that matter, even if they're under psychiatric
yeah.
care. So,
I would like to think that at this point in time, if somebody knew a child who, you know, a small child who was torturing animals, that would be sort of a hey, we've got a, you know, a budding potential serial killer here, that would be at least, you know, something that maybe could be caught in time, possibly handled before it gets any worse. But it's, again, back to this question of, is it something neurological
yeah.
with a lack of empathy? Yeah.
Well, it'll either be this show or Law and Order that will handle it, because I believe they've done a couple episodes on that theme, too.
Probably more than a couple.
Yeah, probably more than a couple, and probably more than a couple than it will be before it's over. Thank you so much, Debbie Felton. Appreciate this, and I hope you enjoyed the conversation. I hope it was worth staying up this late.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you very much for having me, and I also want to thank the callers for all of their interesting comments and questions.
I want to have you back closer to Halloween and talk about your ghost stories in antiquities book.
Be great. I would love that. It sounds like a lot of fun.
I'll have to. I know it's been a while. Maybe you have to brush up on it. It's not as recent as this one, but it sounded great. And I love those. The ghost stories that are just as old as these stories in Monsters and Monarchs. A lot of people are going to be waking up when it's dawn in New Orleans and then into Mississippi and onward. And they're going to find that a lot of destruction has happened from Hurricane Ida, even with a Category 1. So be ready to help if you're called upon to make a contribution to a local drive for food or whatever, water, or for the Red Cross, or just keep those people in your prayers tonight as you go to bed. And in the meantime, Deus te amat, and I do too.